This podcast is sponsored by GoDaddy.com. If you want to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has what you need. .com names as low as $1.99, plus world-class hosting, fast and easy website builders, and much more. All you have to do is enter the code POD25 when you check out, and you'll save an additional 10% on your web hosting offer. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com, and don't forget to enter your promo code POD25. That's P-O-D and the number 25. Some restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to
Internet Marketing Unwrapped. Wrapped.
Now, here's Heather Vail.
Welcome to Internet Marketing Unwrapped, the world's first live teleshow, part teleseminar, part talk show, found online at internetmarketingunwrapped.com. I'm your host, Heather Vail, and every week I'll be grilling the Internet's top experts live to unwrap their most guarded secrets and help you unwrap your own potential for online superstardom and super wealth. If you'd like to ask a question at any point during the call, just press 1-1 on your telephone keypad and listen for me to announce part of your phone number and invite you to ask your question. This is the first episode, and our very first guest is David Garfinkel, a veteran marketer with over 20 years experience under his belt. Known as the world's number one copywriting coach, he's helped people in over 100 industries make millions of dollars online with his copy and by teaching them to write their own copy. David Garfinkel is also known as the marketer's marketer by industry insiders because even the top leaders in the field call on him for help. He's the author of Advertising Headlines That Make You Rich, the co-author of Guerrilla Copywriting along with J. Conrad Levinson, another upcoming guest on this show, and the producer of leading multimedia training including Breakthrough Copywriting, Killer Copy Tactics, and Copywriting Templates. David, thank you so much for being here today on Internet Marketing Unwrapped.
Oh, thank you, Heather. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
I wanted you to be the first guest on Internet Marketing Unwrapped because I think copywriting forms the basis of an online business, but you're more of the expert on that. So how important is copywriting to running an online business?
Well, I would take issue with you only in that I certainly think it's the basis of an online business, but I believe copywriting is the kernel of entrepreneurship. There is no other way that I know of that you can start with nothing more than an idea and some words and maybe a little capital and a product and a service and start from scratch. There are a lot of people who go out and get business plans and lots of money, and a lot of them crash and burn. With copywriting, you will be able to test your market. You will be able to build your business from sales. And online, it's imperative. There's no way to have an online business work in the long term without good copy, because there's no way to make sales other than with copy or with the spoken word or with the televised word online.
Okay, so what sets good copy apart from bad copy?
Well, the short answer is results. Good copy gets the results that it asks for. The kind of copy that I teach people about, that I've used in my own business, that I work with my clients on, that I write about, is called direct response copy. And it's very different from the kind of copy, and I say that sort of hesitantly, that you'll see in a lot of magazine ads, image ads, TV ads that aren't direct response ads. Copy asks people to take an action, and good copy gets them to take the action. Whether the action is to come to a teleseminar like this one, whether it is to buy a product, to sign up for a service, or simply to request an appointment or to request more information, to get on a mailing list. Copy is something you'll see on what we call a squeeze page or an opt-in page, an opt-in form. A lot of people think, well, all I have to do is offer something. This product sells itself. That's not the case almost all of the time. You need to be able to explain it in a compelling way that really motivates people to take the action to request it.
Okay, so that's the results, and that's what you need to do. But the question is, how do you do it? How do you write copy that's good and that is compelling to people and does make them take action?
Well, the first thing you have to do, it's not just the words, it's the mindset and the point of view. You have to see things from your customer's point of view rather than your own, and this is what trips up a lot of people. You have to understand that nobody is ever inherently interested in your product or your service or your info product or your idea. Oh, maybe a few people, maybe your friends, maybe people who are inherently fascinated by everything. But what they're really interested in is themselves. And people usually have problems and desires that haven't been resolved. If you can hook your offer, whether your offer is a product or a service, to somebody's existing desire that they're aware of, and gradually lead them to see and understand and believe that you have a solution for them, that's the first step to writing good copy.
So if the buyer is not me, and I'm not writing for myself, how do I get myself into the head of the buyer and understand what their problem is and what kind of solution I can offer them?
Well, that's a really important question. There are a few ways to do it. One way is to talk to people. Now, you know, a lot of people think an internet business means never having to talk to anybody. And if you know your market well enough from past experience or from reading about them, you might be able to get away with that. But a much better thing to do is to talk to people. If you have a newsletter, to look at the questions they ask in their emails as it relates to their problems. Another way is to shop the competition. Look at the people who are successful and look at how they are talking to the same market that you're going after. Look at the phrases they use. Look at the words they use. Look at the things they start talking about first and how they transition from what they're talking about into their product offer, their service offer. A lot of it's just paying attention and reaching out to people and analyzing what they're saying if they're your market, or what's working if someone's selling to your market.
How important is it to know your target market in terms of their gender, their age?
Okay, there are, I'd say, three areas of how you can know your target market. One is demographics, and those are things that you can measure usually with numbers, like demographics, like their gender. That's not really a number, but that's a hard classification for the most part, either male or female. Age is a number. Income is a number. Number of kids is a number. That's demographics. That's important. What's just as important is what's called psychographics. And doesn't mean that your customers are psycho, although some of them probably are. It means, what are their values? What's important to them? What do they believe? You know, there's an old marketing saying, you don't want to send a postcard about a steak restaurant to vegetarians. Well, vegetarians isn't really a demographic so much as a psychographic. I mean, you can't find a zip code with, for the most part, which is going to guarantee that someone is a vegetarian. But you can find these things out other ways. People who click on Google AdWords about vegetarianism in direct mail, people who subscribe to Vegetarian Times, etc. So you have to, okay, there's a concept called people who have raised their hand. And what you're trying to do is get someone to have raised their hand, just like they're sitting in a classroom and they raise their hand, where they indicate an interest in something. And the best kind of person who's raised their hand is one who has raised their hand with some cash in it. If someone has spent money on a product that appeals to people with the values and the desires and the interests that your market should have, that is going to be the best and most likely prospect for what you're selling.
If we don't know the specific demographics and the specific psychographics of the audience for our product, how can we write to appeal to the broadest audience possible?
That's really dangerous. People who say my product is for everyone, they may be right, But I'm saying, okay, so are you in a financial position to compete with Walmart, which is the largest company in the Fortune 500 list? It's much safer and smarter and more profitable initially to pick a market rather than a product. It doesn't mean that you want to ignore what you're interested in doing, but the idea of do what you love and the money will follow, there's a little problem with that, Heather.
What's that?
They don't tell you how long. And sometimes it can be a real long time. Your product always, your business always starts with a market, because if there isn't a defined market, it's pretty much like throwing darts in the dark where you don't even know what you're throwing the dart at.
Okay, so if I'm writing for a specific demographic, like females 30 to 50, or if I'm writing for a specific psychographic, like vegetarians, as you mentioned, what kind of words am I going to be using to appeal specifically to that demographic or psychographic?
Well, you want to use the words that they use. You want to, if you're writing for females 30 to 50, the best thing you could do to begin with would be to find websites, if we're going to talk about the internet, that have, that are aimed at that market, that have a low Alexa ranking. Do you know what Alexa is? Alexa.com. Alexa is a ranking of how popular a website is. And I think Microsoft.com or Google or Yahoo is number one. So the lower the number, and I haven't checked this lately, so it might be someone else, but if it's under 100,000, it's usually pretty good. If it's under 100, it's like among the most popular in the world. You want to look at what they're writing. I mean, if you're not going to go out and talk to a lot of females between 30 and 50, then you want to find out where they're going and what they're reading that appeals to them. And you have to sort of draw some conclusions from your research and say, okay, well, here's how they're talking to them informally. They're talking to them about issues that are very concrete and emotional. They're giving practical advice. They're not afraid to talk about romance. I'm just guessing here. Am I on target at all?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So, obviously, when you're mentioning going and picking websites that have good Alexa rankings, because you don't want to be looking at the websites that are not popular, because that's when you start, you know, modeling websites that aren't actually converting themselves. And that leads us into the whole concept of swipe files. Can you explain, first of all, what is a swipe file and what's the right way to use a swipe file without infringing on other people's copyright? And that would be copyright with an R-I-G-H-T rather than W-R-I-T-E.
Yeah. I'm going to take this at a very basic level, because a lot of people get confused about this, and some people who should know better have gotten in trouble, and some people who don't know better find out real fast when they almost get in trouble. Okay, first of all, let me define copyright with a C-O-P-Y-R-I-G-H-T. That's the circle C. Under U.S. law, and I think Canadian law and a lot of other countries that are signatories to the Berne Convention, I believe, there's a law that says creators, not the creator, not God, but individual human creators of art, of writing, whatever, have certain rights to what they created. And that right is known as a copyright. And the essence of this, I'm not a lawyer, but I did work with a lawyer for a long time on public domain, so I understand the essence of this. The essence of it is that once you create something, you own the copyright. You don't even have to file anything with any official body. It's yours, and no one else is allowed to use it without your permission. Now, what do you really have the right to? You can't have the right to facts. You can't have the right to an idea. In writing, you have a right to a particular string of words put together in a particular order. So if I write an article about females from 30 to 50, what I had to say, the words I have to say, those belong to me, providing that I came up with them, that I didn't get them from somewhere else. And I own the right to that. And if someone else reprinted it without my permission, theoretically I could sue them for what's called copyright infringement, which is like they stole from me. intellectual thievery. Now, notice I said you can't copyright ideas.
Right.
You also can't copyright titles, like titles of a book, titles of a movie, and you can't copyright portions of what you did. You can't copyright, like if I come up with the world's best headline, the world's best headline might be, who knows, free everything, no strings attached, I don't know. someone else could take that same headline and change it a little, free everything with no conditions whatsoever. And again, this isn't legal advice, but the general practice of the way things are is there should be no problem with that, because what I've done is I've used part of the word, part of the headline, the free everything part, and the other part, I used the concept, but I changed the concept. I changed it from no strings attached to with no conditions whatsoever. Now, when you get, now, where this all comes into copy is there's good news and bad news about copy. It's, until you've had experience with copy, it's not all that logical. What works in copy, the actual words and the structures that work, are relatively few in number compared to all the possibilities. And that's the bad news. The good news is we know what they are. The reason, and we, I don't just mean you and I, Heather, I mean those of us in the direct marketing industry, the information's available. And what you can do, if you can extract the structure, or you can use some but not all of the words, you can rebuild the copy. You can write it your own way, and you'll have a running start on towards success. You'll have much better odds of making it work. You know, in my breakthrough copywriting course, a lot of what I do is templates. I have templates for headlines, and what I've done, for example, here's a headline. Now, I bet everyone on this call has seen one version of this headline, but they probably haven't seen the original. Here's the original headline. Who else wants a whiter wash? And another version is, who else wants a screen star figure? Okay, these are sort of like a little insulting to women, right? But they're from 60 years ago.
Yeah, right? I figured.
Yeah, it's... But if you take the same structure, and what's the structure? Well, the structure is who else wants, and then some kind of result, some kind of desirable result. Who else wants copy that gets double the response that you were getting yesterday? Okay? That's using the structure, but that's not violating a copyright. That's not plagiarism. That's taking the first part of the headline and using it, who else wants, three words, and taking the second part and using the concept, and the concept is put a desirable result that people are looking for that you can provide, and it'll get them hooked and right into your copy. You can go through a whole sales letter that way by stepping out from the actual words, sort of looking at it from a view from 30,000 feet, not literally, you don't have to get in an airplane to do this, but you mentally float above it, and you see, okay, what's the structure there? What's the intent? What are they trying to do? And again, what I'm best known for in copywriting is having created templates and structures for this so that people can do that.
That's interesting, because I've noticed lately that there's hundreds of websites using Who Else Wants in their headline, and I had the impression that it was actually something new, but you're telling me that they were using that 60 years ago with good results as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a book right here called How to Write a Good Advertisement by Vic Schwab, and I'm not sure if he has that headline in there, but I've seen the original ad, and I can remember it from another one where when they used to call Boston the hub. They don't really call it that anymore. They have these regional ads for Who Else Wants a Whiter Wash, and they have a testimonial from a hub woman who talks about how her washes a lot. And you can sort of tell from the pictures and the kind of washing machine she has that this is before I was born. And that was a long time ago.
There's another tendency that I've noticed in online copy recently, and that's the tendency towards violent imagery, like killer headlines that crush your competition and annihilate them and leave them crippled and bleeding in your wake and stuff like that. Where did that type of violent imagery start coming from?
Maybe Sun Tzu, who wrote The Art of War. A lot of people in business believe business is war, and when you're in a very competitive industry, mature industry, and you're trying to scrap for just a little more market share, it seems like it. But copywriters often talk about that. I think it's also part of the beyond business. It's part of the culture. I mean, people talk about killer ideas. That's a killer product in Silicon Valley. They talk about a killer app, you know, killer application. As far as this extreme violence, I don't know. I don't write that way. I mean, one of my products is called Killer Copy Tactics, but I use that because my publisher, who did have a military background, had a previous product called Killer Something or Other, and we just used the same branding or the same title stem, the same word at the beginning of the title. I can't really speak to it, though. I'm not an internet marketing socio-anthropologist, so all I can do is guess.
I would guess that that actually appeals more to the male demographic than the female demographic.
Every woman I've worked with has told me the same thing. Men, you know, men are more about hunting and killing, and women are more about nurturing and supporting life. So probably, I mean, as a general rule, obviously, there are exceptions.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the psychology, but what actually is the psychology that makes someone pull out their credit card or pull out their wallet and make them actually want to buy something?
I'll give you an example. If you went to a meeting and there was someone that you knew and trusted, and they said, "Heather, I've got something in my hand. Would you give me $20 for it?" And you said, "What's in your hand?" And they show you 5 cents, you go, "What? No." But if they said, "Heather, I've got something in my hand, would you give me $20 for it?" And you say, "What's in your hand?" They show you a crisp $100 bill. You have Canadian $100 bills, right?
Yeah, we do.
Good, okay. Does it have a beaver on it?
No.
I know some of your money has beavers on it.
No, just the nickel has a beaver on it.
Oh, just the nickel, okay. Yeah, so that was a nickel. So would you... And you trusted the person, you knew they weren't going to get you later, you'd probably give them the $20,
sure,
right?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what goes on in copy, except you're not literally giving out a $100 bill for a $20 bill. What you're doing is you are creating a perception of value and enough trust and enough relationship in writing, and this is, of course, the skill. This is the million-dollar skill to do all of those things, so that the person feels they are getting more value from what they're buying from you than they are letting go of in terms of dollars of cash. That's the key. Now, how do you do it? There are lots of ways to do it. I can give you a laundry list, or we can go through one or two examples, but that's the essence. When someone feels, you may or may not like this, but people want to feel like they're getting the better end of the deal, and you have to find a way to convince them that they are.
Okay, well, yeah, let's go a little bit deeper into the how, because, like you said, if it's somebody that I trust, then yes, I am going to give them that $20 for the $100 bill. However, if it's somebody that I don't trust, I'm probably going to be thinking, well, this is a scam. This can't be for real. It's too good to be true, and therefore I'm not going to give up my $20. So what is the how to making it so that people can?
Okay, first of all, you have to offer them the fulfillment of a desire or the solution to a problem that's emotionally important to them. So, you know, if somebody, for example, really wants to go on a cruise, and you've targeted people like that, and they think cruises are worth $600, and you can show them how they get a bona fide, valid, reliable, safe, acceptable cruise for $300, you know, that's called your offer. What are you going to offer them for a fixed amount of money that they think is worth more than that amount of money? Now, how do you build the trust? Well, there are lots of ways. One way is, let's start with how your website looks. It needs to look professional, not fancy and glitzy, but it needs to look clean. The words need to be spelled right. The layout needs to look good. The graphics need to be sharp. It needs to look like it was coming from a legitimate business. Your words need to be spelled correctly so you look like you're, you know, for real and not an amateur who decided to do this, you know, late one afternoon after a couple six-pack of beers. Now, another way to build trust is with good testimonials. And when we get to our critique, that's something I want to focus on, because while the person has testimonials, they're not building the trust. There are a couple kind of testimonials. There are user testimonials and there are expert testimonials. And a testimonial would be like if you're at that meeting, if a friend goes up to you and say, you know, I've seen him do this before. The guy's got too much money and believe me, he won't come stalking you later. This is just what he does for kicks instead of giving money to charity. That might make you feel a little safer about exchanging your $20 for the $100, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing. A testimonial is sort of like a friend putting their arm around you and whispering in your ear, hey, this is really okay. You can buy this, you know, or you can take this action, or you can sign up for this newsletter, or whatever the offer is. Another way is to look like you know what you're talking about. A really good way is to speak in the customer's language in words that sound like the same words that they would use. So those are a few ways that you can build up trust.
Okay. Well, speaking of trust, I like to sell products that are of good enough quality that they can actually sell themselves, whether it's my own product or whether I'm selling a product for somebody else. I need to know that that product is a good quality product. Is it possible to sell a bad product if the copy is good enough?
Absolutely. There are many examples, but there's a catch. And the catch is that in the process of selling it, you're going to destroy trust with the people you sold it to. You're probably going to get a lot of refunds. It may end up costing you more money than you made. And worst of all, one worst thing is they're not going to want to, those customers won't want to buy from you a second time. But worst of all, your reputation will start to spread as a scam artist or as a sleazy person to do business with. And the long-term cost of doing something like that is incalculably high.
So what are the five key elements that copy needs to close a sale?
Okay. Well, the first one is more of a process than a quality of the copy. And that is you need to be constantly testing. I have an example of, for example, you could have an ad, like a Google AdWords ad, and you could try it to, let me see if I can find it here, because I have this. Now, I'll give you the general idea, and while I'm searching through my papers, I'll see if I can find the exact example. You can have an ad in Google AdWords. You know how those go where your first, here we go. That's not what I'm looking for. Okay, so let's say you have a course, and it is a course that where you can train a dog, train a puppy in 8 hours or less, right? I mean, that's pretty amazing, huh?
I guess.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't have dogs, so.
From dog owners I've talked to, it sounds like it. And you call it Train Rover Fast. Now, listen to these two ads. These are just Google AdWords ads. They're only four lines long. Secrets of Dog Training. Fast dog training methods pros use for winning results. www.trainroverfast. Here's my second ad. Fast dog training method. Secrets of dog training pros use for winning results. www.trainroverfast.com. That sound like the same, but the difference is the first one had secrets of dog training as a headline, and the second one had fast dog training method as the headline. Now, Heather, I'm going to ask you a question that you can answer as well as anyone else in the world, and that is which ad's going to work better?
Well, I like to know secrets, so I go for the first one, but I'm not the dog owner, so.
Even if you were, you wouldn't know unless you tested it. I mean, Gary Bensavenga, who's done a lot of direct mail, did something at his seminar. I wasn't there, but I heard about this, where he had a number of split tests of advertising headlines that were mailed. And there were people in the room that had mailed millions of pieces, written pieces, you know, had mailed them, had written them, and more than half the time they guessed wrong. You can't guess as to what's going to work the best. So the first secret to be successful copy is you have to always be testing. Okay?
Okay.
And it could make a huge difference. If one of those ads got clicked on five times for every four times the other one got clicked on, in other words, if it had a 25% higher click-through rate, Google would lower the cost of the ad. That's the way Google works. And let's say they lowered it 15%, which is reasonable, and you had a 30% profit margin, you would be making 35% more profit just because you tested. Now, 35% more profit can be the difference between just breaking even and having a profitable business. So testing, it's huge. Most people don't do it, but they should. Second secret is to model success. You know the old definition of insanity from Einstein?
Yeah,
doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people do that. They don't look at what they have their opinions about what successful people are doing, and maybe they found someone who's successful that they felt was crooked, so they generalize and they figure all successful people are crooked. Well, they're not. Most of them aren't, and you usually can't last if you are. But you need to find out. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. I've done a lot of work with Jim Edwards, and he and I wrote two e-books together. He's promoting a third one that I wrote. I promote a piece of software that he wrote, or I wrote the copy for it, rather. And Jim always has the text area in his website at exactly 600 pixels. Jim's very successful. Jim is making a lot of money. And he tests everything, and he found 600 pixels is the width. Now, I was working with a guy, and his web designer insisted that the website had to be about one-third wider than that, 800 pixels. And I got into some really nasty confrontations with the guy. And eventually, he agreed to do what the successful people did, and this guy is on his way to having a huge business. Now, there's a reason for that. Sometimes you know the reason, sometimes you don't. I mean, I talked to Jim about it, and at one point, about a quarter of the people on the Internet were on AOL, and when AOL opens a browser, it doesn't open the full screen. It opens 600 pixels wide. There are other reasons for that. If people have really large types, about if they have the type size, the screen resolution set to 800 by 600, it's going to be, they may only be able to get 600 pixels on the screen. There's another reason. The type is not very readable when it's all the way across. But there's another reason where you want to have just one column of type if you want to sell something. But the reasons aren't as important as the fact that it works. And a lot of people don't model success, but when you do model success, you are more successful. Okay. Number three is your tactics need to support your strategies. And this gets back to your question, Heather, about can good copy sell a bad product? Answer is yes. But that's, to me, an example of a tactic that doesn't support a strategy. Let me explain. A tactic is something you do today. There are many definitions, but I'll make it very simple here. The tactic is something you do today. The strategy is your plan for the long term. So if your plan for the long term is to have a business where you have happy customers that trust you, that come back again and again, okay? I mean, for example, Kevin, who you heard earlier on the call, he was at the Breakthrough Copywriting Seminar. We had communicated before. He bought other products. He'd emailed me. He'd written on my blog. That's an example of a customer that, you know, the kind of customer most businesses want to have. I certainly like having customers like Kevin. And so that's a tactic and a strategy. When I make a particular offer, if he buys it, that would be a tactic. If you make a sale and you burn your customers in the process, that's a tactic that doesn't support a strategy. Now, I know this might not sound much like copywriting, but a lot of times, you know, you were talking about this very violent form of copywriting. Well, another thing that bothers people is, you know, hype, you know, very over-exaggerated claims, you know, totally unbelievable copy. That will actually work in a lot of cases. And then a person finds out that your product doesn't live up to the over-exaggerated claims that you made, and there's a strategy that doesn't support a tactic. So number three is your tactics need to support your strategies. Can I go on?
Yeah, go on. That's two more,
okay,
right?
Number four is this. It's called remember that it's new to them. And I'm going to get into this quite a bit in the critique when we have time for that. But the main thing is, as an expert in your business and as someone who's familiar with your product, you don't have that excitement about it being something new that your prospect does. And so you're going to assume at almost an unconscious level, you're going to assume that they know things about your product that they really don't. You need to step backwards in time in your mind to the place where you were when you first discovered. You need to recapture that excitement. That's really important. The energy, the excitement, and the simple wide-eyed awe and wonder that many people are too cynical to really embrace the value of. You need to just let go of the cynicism and look at it almost through a child's eyes. That is really what makes copy sparkle and makes it sell. And the fifth thing is to be sure to connect all the dots. I'm going to give you an example. Let's say you're selling a hat. Let's say you have an online apparel store and you're selling a men's hat and it's a bowler's hat and you describe the a bowler hat, rather, not a bowler's hat, a bowler hat. you describe it, and at the end of your description, you write, just give us a call and let us know what you want. Well, that sounds pretty good, right? It doesn't connect all the dots, because how are they going to do that? They're going to have to search for your phone number, and as they're doing that, they might forget how excited they are about the hat. Here's what connecting all the dots looks like. It's easy to order this great new bowler hat. You can call us 24 hours a day at 800-555-0000. Operators are on duty waiting to take your order, and your new bowler hat will be shipped to you the next business day. That's connecting all the dots. So those are the five things. Always be testing, model success, your tactics need to support your strategies. Remember, it's new to them, and be sure to connect all the dots.
Okay, you just gave us five key elements that copy needs to close a sale, and you didn't mention the formula that everybody else talks about, the AIDA formula. So does that work or not?
AIDA, yeah, that stands for attention, interest, desire, and action. I think you could look at copy that works and say, yeah, this follows the AIDA formula, because the copy that works sort of has to. You know, you have to get someone's attention. You have to get them interested. You have to create enough desire for them to want it enough to take action. So it works looking backwards, but I think it's a very poor way to put copy together looking forward. You've got too many other factors to deal with these days, too much resistance, and people are too busy simply to think that if you can grab their attention, get their interest, stoke up their desire, and get them to take action, that alone is going to work.
Okay. Well, let's get down to the specifics here. Let's take a look at this web page that you've chosen to tweak the copy on and see what we can do to make this convert better.
Okay. I mailed out to my list the URL, but I know there's some people who aren't on my list, so let me give everyone the URL, and then I'll be reading some of the copy out loud anyway. It's ear-infection-cure.com, ear-infection-cure.com/indexsplit.php, indexsplit.php. So it's ear-infection-cure.com/indexsplit.php. And Mike Ryan is the copywriter who sent this to me, and he asked me, you know, to critique it. And he admitted that he's been getting clicks from AdWords, so he's paying for those clicks, and he hasn't made one sale yet. Now, the headline is, okay, well, the title bar, that's the little blue bar at the very top of your screen, says, cure your ear infection.
Right.
And then the headline is, quote, how a concerned dad relieved his daughter's chronic ear infections without antibiotics. Okay, right away, there's a mismatch between the title bar and the headline.
Yeah.
Sure, your infection would mean the dad or the mom or the person reading this. Now, the little child isn't going to read this, so it should say, cure your child's ear infection. You might say, well, that doesn't make a difference. Well, that's not true. It does, because people are, you know, you were talking about trust. We were both talking about trust. And one of the ways people decide very quickly whether to trust someone or not is consistency. I mean, if you see someone at an event and they have a really nice tuxedo and a bow tie and a white shirt, and then they have some torn, dirty jeans on, something is wrong, right? It doesn't match. I mean, they could be in working clothes, and that's consistent, or they could be in a tuxedo, and that's consistent. But when you have something that doesn't quite line up, it's like a friend of mine told me that cops are trained to play a game called What's Wrong with This Picture? They constantly are looking for inconsistencies. That's how they find the beginning of problems.
But that outfit was very fashionable in the 80s.
That's true. Well, maybe not dirty, maybe torn.
Okay.
Maybe it was. I don't know. I probably wasn't in the right circle.
Well, I understand the point anyway.
Okay, good. So, you know, I went backwards a little bit. He said he's getting clicks. So that means that when you're getting clicks, it means people are clicking on his Google AdWords ad. It means people are interested. But one of the things I looked at is I went to inventory.overture.com, which is where you can get a sampling of what people are clicking on. And I went for, I looked at the different specific keyword searches. And while there were 14,287 keyword searches, there were only about 26,000 that had infant or baby or ear infection cure in there. There was one, there were 500 searches for antibiotic for ear infection, but there was nothing I could find about cure ear infection without antibiotics.
Hmm.
Okay, and that's part of his headline. His headline is how a concerned dad relieved his daughter's chronic ear infection without antibiotics. Now, I'm going to go a little bit over the edge here, Heather, to make a point. This is probably more information you want to know, but when I was in seventh grade, I was playing football in high school gym class, and I fell on a piece of glass. The cut was so bad on my knee that I had to go to the doctor, and he put stitches in. A few years ago, another healer told me that one reason that my knee itches sometimes is I was allergic to the catgut that they used for the stitches in my knee.
Hmm.
And you're saying, well, why are you telling me this, David? Here's why. I could say, gee, you know, I found this really neat way to make my knee stop itching. And I might put together an ebook called How to Make Your Left Knee Stop Itching, Even If You're Allergic to the Suture That the Surgeon Used.
Okay.
And what's my problem there? My problem is that I'm assuming that because this is an issue for me, it's an issue for a lot of people. Now, it may be, but I have no proof of it one way or the other.
Right.
Actually, I've looked at a lot of left knees, and I've never seen a scar like mine. So I have more of it's anecdotal evidence, but... Do you see my point here?
Yeah.
He thinks it's really important to a lot of parents to cure kids' ear infections without antibiotics. But all the evidence points that there's no one searching for that.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that his book's not going to work. It means that his main opportunity to get people bought in to his webpage, he's blown it. Because he focused on something that's probably important to him, but not evidently that important to anyone else. Now, if you read this copy, it's pretty good. I like it. It was 1 a.m. when I heard the cry from my daughter's bedroom. I rushed in and found her crying feverish and tugging at her ear. Not again, I thought to myself as I tried to comfort my sobbing child. It was another earache in a long line of earaches. I bet there are a lot of parents who can relate to that. Kids do that, and that's what they do. They pull on their ears when they hurt, and they cry, and the parents are really worried. And apparently, a little research I've done, because of the way the ear grows, they're prone to ear infections just because of the anatomy of the ear in the first few years of life. And then he says, you feel helpless sometimes when your child is in pain. This was the fourth ear infection in her short life. Many questions went through my mind. And he has this copy that's very heartrending, very compelling. And he did that very well. But as you go through the copy, and I'm not going to take the time to go through every word, it prints out to 8 pages long, he never really ends the story. You don't know if it was 1 a.m. did he call the doctor. You don't know how he solved it. And you don't know pretty much anything else about what he learned or what he decided. Because what he does is he says, at the time I thought my only option was to get her to a doctor as quick as possible, get some antibiotics, and then you don't know what he did. Did he go? And what happened the next time? Then he jumps right to, I know better now. After extensive research and conversations with experts, I was able to educate myself about earaches, ear infections, and how best to treat and prevent them. I put all my findings into a book. But before I published it, I ran an ad on the internet asking for input from other parents. I received a flood of questions that people wanted answered. Many of them were the same questions I'd had, but many were things I never considered. Well, this is all good, but there are some, again, some trust and congruency problems here. He says, how a concerned dad relieved his daughter's chronic ear infections without antibiotics. Now, that's a promise. He is making a promise. In that headline, it's an implied promise that says, I'm going to tell you how I relieved her ear infections.
Right.
He never does. So he's broken trust there. Okay, so there's a trust issue there. Then he tells these stories without really ending them. That's another problem. A third problem is, if you're a parent, you're not going to want to get someone's advice just because he did a lot of research. I mean, that's too big a chance to take. When you look at his testimonials, he has people who say the book's impressive and it's important, and it's great it was written by a parent. Well, you know, those are all nice, warm, fuzzy testimonials, but what's a parent going to worry about? Is this the right thing to do for my child? Is this safe? Am I risking my child's health, hearing, life? And if he had a testimonial from a pediatrician saying, you know, something like, Mike Ryan has done an excellent job of telling you when you should go see the doctor and when it's not, you know, as important and what you can do in the meantime, that would, you know, that would go miles. But he doesn't have anything like that. He has something sort of vague. I'm in the medical field, Mark H., Portland, Oregon. Well, you know, what in the medical field could be anything from the chief surgeon or the chief pediatrician in a hospital to someone who works in the cafeteria.
Yeah.
Right? You don't know. Also, none of the testimonials talk about, I tried this with my child and, you know, earaches are no longer the crisis they used to be. So, you know, those are some of the biggest problems I see with it. Now, I have a list of 5 things that he could do. The first thing would be to get an MD and preferably a pediatrician to look at the book to say, I like it for this reason. It's not a substitute for a doctor, but this is really going to help you through the night, know when you need to call the emergency room, when it can wait till the next day. He's done a great job. Something credentializing it from an authority. You know, one of the things that the people who make supplements and sell alternative health supplements have found is people don't blame their doctors. People still trust the doctor. They might blame the drug companies, but so most people don't like antibiotics, but they don't blame the doctor for that. So it'd be good to have a doctor in there. A second thing is testimonials about results. A third thing is to show specifically how this book is going to save you some money. Now, I don't know if it is. I know antibiotics can be expensive. The doctor's visit can be expensive. Unnecessary doctor's visits can be expensive. If he could say specifically, there are times when the doctor would rather you not come. What does a doctor's visit cost? Well, if you're on a copay, maybe it's $10. If you're paying out of pocket, it might be $50. And then the prescription, you know, I mean, he needs to show how it's going to save money. He needs to show how it's going to save time, how it's, he doesn't get into the impact on the parents' lives in a specific enough way. The only real impact copy that he has here is talking about the problem in the beginning. He's done a good job, but he hasn't gone far enough. Another thing he didn't do, Heather, that he should do is he should talk about earaches. If he's an expert, he should demonstrate his expertise. He should say, earaches occur because of this. There are these different types of earaches. What I found is this type, you need to see a doctor right away. This type, you need to see a doctor, you know, in the morning or in a few days. This type, you just simply need to, you know, use this cure, that juice, or this whatever. Okay. So there's a number of things that he could do. I think maybe a better thing for the headline would be how a concerned dad stopped worrying about his daughter's earaches and got to sleep better while she slept better too. I mean, we want to work on it a little bit, but I think, you know, you want to talk about a result that might be more meaningful to parents than relieve his daughter's chronic ear infections without antibiotics. And of course, I think he should change his title bar words from cure ear infection to cure children's ear infections.
Right. Okay, you had mentioned your breakthrough copywriting course earlier. That course claims that anyone can write world-class copy in record time even if they can't write. How exactly does it allow someone to do that?
Well, what we've done is it has a lot of my templates in there. So you can write a headline by using some of the templates, like Who Else Wants. Well, that's only one of 20 templates. I will walk people through. I actually give them examples from 10 or 12 different industries. I have several other kinds of templates in there. I have templates for bullets. Most people don't know how to write bullet points. I have templates for credentializing, templates for guarantees, templates for offers. But more than that, Michael Fortin, who has done a great job with many sales letters, he at one point held the record for the and may still hold the record officially for $1 million sales in one day with John Reese's Traffic Secrets course. Michael was my major co-presenter at that seminar, and he talks about his test results and a lot of simple techniques and step-by-step things you can do to write copy. We also talk about audio copywriting, how you can use audio on the internet. Mike Stewart has information about that. We have a lot of practical information, and it's broken down. One of the things, somebody told me the other day that he had spent about $60,000 with another marketing teacher, and when he had just one of my copywriting courses that doesn't have nearly the amount of information and is totally on the internet, he found that for the first time someone broke it down into simple steps. A lot of the problem with writing is people don't know how to get started, they don't know what to do next, they don't know what to finish, and then they don't know how to finish, and then they don't know how to evaluate what they've done. There are a lot of tools and prompts and templates in this program that makes it easier for people to do that. And that's why we say that you don't have to be a good writer or even know how to write at all to start writing world-class copy.
Okay. I'm going to get you in a minute to tell everyone what kind of deal you have for them today, but I see we have a question from the audience, so I'm just going to go to this question right now.
Hi, David. I'll give you a testimonial of my own. I actually just purchased the Killer Copy Tactics course last week.
Okay.
Begun the homework, the first homework assignment. It's amazing. Thank you very much. My name is Robert Lehrer, by the way. We've emailed each other before.
Hi, Robert.
Hi. The question I had was this, and I think this is fascinating. The first assignment on there, I found where you suggested we get a hold of a National Enquirer and pick the 10 most provocative headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And then write a headline, you know, and then try and like match the headline up with, you know, plugging in our own words, you know, for other subjects. It's a great exercise, except I'm a little stuck. I think I may have picked some headlines that really don't apply to other things. Most of them do, though. I get the message here, but there were a couple that I got really stuck on.
Well, sure, because the National Enquirer is written for a very different purpose than you know, sales copywriting. But what I'm trying to do with that is to get people out of the habit of the Wall Street Journal, USA. Where do you live, Robert?
I live in Tarzana, California.
Okay, so L.A. Times for you, perhaps. You know, the L.A. Times has these sort of factual, dull, you know, matter-of-fact headlines. Occasionally there's a cute headline, there's a clever headline, but there aren't any emotion-packed headlines. I'm picking up my National Enquirer from August 21st here. Sitcom Joker shacks up with gal pal. I mean, that's just sizzling with emotion. You might say it's also dripping with sleaze, and I wouldn't disagree with you. But here's a reveal, the dark past of America's Got Talent star, about moron of the year. I mean, they just sling emotion around, and one thing that holds most people back from writing good copy is that they're all emotionally locked down. The National Enquirer really opens you up to getting that emotional, just like Mike Ryan was doing so well. You notice how in the beginning his copy was very emotional. He had that part right. That's what a lot of people have had it really drummed out of them in school for years, drummed out of them in corporations. And if they're a professional writer, if you worked as a journalist as I did, God forbid that you express any emotions at all, because that wouldn't be quote unquote objective. So this is a way to loosen people up and get people more familiar with the emotional language of copywriting.
All right. Well, it was great. It's a great exercise. I just got stuck on a couple of the headlines. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's normal. You know, like
it's normal. It doesn't mean you're going to be you know, just milling out perfect headlines from the National Enquirer. It means that you're going to start to see headlines in a new way, and I assume that that's something that you're doing.
Oh, yeah, that is. You succeeded at that.
Well, that's good.
Oh, that was great. It's a great exercise, and it really did open my eyes.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. We're going to give away now one of David's 10 sales letter copy secrets for information publishers. And the way that we're going to do that is I'm going to ask a question, and the first person to raise your hand by pressing 1-1 on your keypad, I will go to you and see if you have the answer. So the question is, what are the 5 key elements that copy needs to close sales? If you know the answer, press 1-1 on your keypad. And I will go to you and see if you got the answer right. And David, in the meantime, you can tell us a little bit about what we're giving away, 10 sales letter copy secrets for information publishers.
Yeah, this is a multimedia presentation. Anyone who's selling information or anything else online, I really drill down into what are some of the specific things you need to do in your copy to sell information or anything that's difficult to sell. Selling information is, you know, it's an intangible, and often you're charging a lot of money for something that's no more than electrons or ink or you know, the kind of plastic that multimedia is printed on. So how do you show people the value of the information contained within, which often is worth thousands, tens of thousands of dollars? And I go through it step by step. I break it down into specific points. Do we have a contestant yet?
We do have a contestant. This is the first hand I saw raised. And hi there. What's your name?
Hi, this is Linda in Los Angeles.
Hi, Linda. So what's the answer? What are the 5 key elements that copy needs to close sales?
The 5 elements, as Dave spoke of them, were number 1, the mindset of the buyer and testing it constantly. Number 2, modeling for success, not for your opinions. Number 3 is that the strategy and the tactics need to match. Number 4 is that you need to be as excited about your product as the customer is at finding you. And number 5 is that the dots all need to connect, that the theme needs to match all the way through, and you need to be addressing it step by step.
How'd you do on that, David?
Well, she didn't use the exact words I did, but she understood every single one of them. So I would let her skate by. Linda, you're very smart. You got it.
Thank you.
Okay, so Linda, I'm actually going to give you a chance to up your prize. I have one more question. If you get this right, you're going to get the entire bonus package that we're giving away today. It includes David Garfinkel's interview with me from my other talk show, Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail, the interview and the transcript. It includes a 10-module multimedia course called Paperless Copywriting. It includes the Copywriting Crash Course, Audio and Workbook by Ray Edwards, Jim Edwards on Copywriting and eBooks, an audio eBook, The Newbie's Guide to Basic Copywriting by Tracy Yates, and Copy Magic, How to Use Your Words to Sell Products by Carl Galletti. So for that complete package, what's the difference between a demographic and a psychographic?
Demographics are generally numbers-based, and psychographics are generally values-based.
Very nice.
More qualitative than quantitative.
She's cheating. She must be a teacher of copywriting.
No. And I'm desperately stuck on a homepage I hate and keep rewriting.
So, Linda, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to email me at heather@marketingunwrapped.com. Include your full phone number that you called in with tonight on the call. I have that written down just as a verification that it's you. And I will send you the link so you can download all your gifts.
Wonderful. It's on its way now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you both so much.
Okay. Now, anybody else who wants to get in on getting all those bonuses, we've actually added all those bonuses. They're worth about $500 if you put them all together. We've added all of those bonuses to David's Breakthrough Copywriting course. So, David, if you can just give everyone the details of how they can get this special offer just by being a listener on the call tonight.
Right. We have a special URL, and I've misplaced it. Do you know what it is?
I do. It's marketingunwrapped.com/breakthrough copywriting. So marketingunwrapped, unwrapped.com/breakthrough copywriting with a WRITING.
Yeah, that's good. So what we're doing is for the same price, the same regular price that you'll see on the website. This was a $5,000 seminar. We had people flying in from all over the world, from Japan. We had people in from Europe and Australia. Kevin was there. And the complete course includes 9 DVDs, transcripts of the DVDs, audio of the DVDs, and we have 7 bonuses. And these are all rifle shot specific things. One guy who writes for Boardroom, who writes David Deutsch, the secret copywriter, and he talks about how you write for mailings that go in the millions. We have Craig Perrine talking about relationship copywriting, Jim Edwards talking about info products, but I bet it's different from the bonus. I can't be sure. Mike Stewart talking about audio copywriting. We have the 4 copywriters roundtable. This was a teleseminar that Michael Fortin, Brian Keith Voiles, Craig and I did. It's a lot of good stuff, and people have been getting great results with it. We have someone in England that's selling it just to people in England. Anyway, that's what it is. And if you order through the special link, which is
marketingunwrapped.com/breakthrough copywriting.
Yeah, marketingunwrapped.com/breakthrough copywriting. You get that entire $500 bonus package that Heather mentioned. You'll also get the multimedia. It's online, so you can look at that one immediately. We'll send you the link to it. The 10 sales letter secrets for selling information online, as well as you'll get the breakthrough copywriting. And it is guaranteed. You have 30 days after you get it to look at it. No risk. You'll want to keep it, though, when you get it. But you don't have to. So that's how to do it.
Now, I see there's a bunch of hands up, and a couple of them were up when we asked the last question. Why don't we give away one more package? And I'm going to let you ask the question this time, and I'm going to go for the second hand that I had seen raised.
Okay.
Hi there. Are you on the line?
Yep, I'm right here.
Hi, what's your name?
DK.
DK?
Hi,
so,
DK. Are you the guy in Saskatchewan?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, my question is, when Heather asked me how important copywriting was to online business, I said it was the something of something bigger than just online business. What did I say?
The kernel of entrepreneurship.
I think we have a winner.
That's word for word what you said.
Wow. That's
correct. Very good.
Okay, so you won 10 sales letter copy secrets for information publishers. Now, David normally sells this for $97, so that's a good value right there. But for the whole $500 package, do you have another question for him, David?
Well, unfortunately, I don't remember what you asked me. Let me think about this for a second. Okay, name. Okay, this is going to be a tough one, DK. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
Okay, name three mistakes that I pointed out in Mike Ryan's sales letter on the ebook about kids' ear infections.
Okay, well, the first thing was that there was a mismatch between the title bar and the headline. Like, the title bar talks about, like, cure your infection, whereas the book was for parents to cure their kids' infection.
Good.
That's one. And in his, like, in his headline, he was making claims for something that people weren't searching for. Like, he went to Overture and he did keyword searches, but he didn't find one for, like, parents who are looking for cures for ear infections without antibiotics, whereas
mm-hmm.
he was. But I guess he didn't finish the story, so to speak. Like, he's you don't know how he finished the story. He also said that in the headline he made, like, an implied promise that, like, he was going to show you how he cured his kid's ear infection without antibiotics.
Okay, you've named four correctly. I only have one question for you.
Okay.
Did you used to be a court reporter or something?
No, I just took copious notes.
You really listened well. Okay, well, I would give him the bonus package, Heather.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you again to email me, heather@marketingunwrapped.com, and give me the whole phone number that you called into this call with so I can verify that that's you, and I'll send you out the link to download the $500 bonus package. Okay, so if anybody else wants to get in on that $500 bonus package, all you have to do is take advantage of David's breakthrough copywriting course through the special link, marketingunwrapped.com/breakthrough-copywriting, and you will actually get, again, this whole package, which is worth $500. It includes 10 sales letter copy secrets for information publishers by David Garfinkel, the interview we did together for Success Unwrapped with Heather Vail, the audio and the transcripts, the paperless copywriting 10-module multimedia e-course, the copywriting crash course, audio and workbook by Ray Edwards, with reprint rights, by the way, Jim Edwards on copywriting, an audio ebook with reprint rights, The Newbie's Guide to Basic Copywriting by Tracy Yates, also with reprint rights, and Copy Magic, How to Use Your Words to Sell Products by Carl Galletti with Len Thurmond and Ray McNally. And again, that's by going to marketingunwrapped.com/breakthrough-copywriting. And it looks like we've gone over time. We've had a very good call with lots of information. David, I want to thank you so much for being here today and for giving us so much valuable information that we can all take home and do better copy with.
Oh, you're welcome, Heather. It's my pleasure. It's always good to talk to you.
Thanks.